The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
We are so happy to begin the final hour with one of our favorite guests, Christine Brennan, the longtime columnist for USA Today. I think in the span of 2 hours yesterday, maybe I was imagining, I think I saw Christine twice on CNN and once on PBS, but maybe I missed one or two of her appearances. But she is with us with so much going on, not only in the world that we normally talk about, but the Olympics beginning 2 weeks from today. First of all, Christine, how are you? I know you're busy. Good afternoon.
Well, great to be on with you, Paul. Thank you. And I hope all is well with you. Yes, things are good. You know, it's summer. I'm getting a beep there. I apologize. It's summer, and, you know, the weather is actually nice this weekend in Washington, D.C. And I've got a few COVID tests next week to take before I travel to Tokyo on the 17th, on Sunday, Saturday, a week from tomorrow. And, yes, it's an Olympic season unlike any other. But as someone who's covered the Olympics for a long time, I'm really looking forward to this, and you know, it's news and then more news, which I guess is, as journalists, it's kind of what we live for.
Yeah, you've covered so many different Olympics, and everything is different this year. We just went through a sports season where, you know, there were not many fans, depending on, well, there were a few depending on where you looked, but how do you think that is going to affect the games?
The news, the official word was, of course, yesterday, Paul, as you know, that that no fans would be allowed. A while ago, they determined no foreign fans, so no one from the United States or you know, anywhere else in the world, Europe, anywhere. And now this decision, which was a real tough one, to say no Japanese fans, no local fans. And now that's for Tokyo and the surrounding area. Some of the other venues, softball, baseball, may have some fans. But it's really sad because, you know, if the cameras pan, it's a TV show anyway, and if the cameras, you know, show even by just an accident, you know, in gymnastics, you know, show the empty stands, I think it's going to remind a lot of us, Americans especially, of what we lived about a year ago, you know, that plunging us back into 2020 with the empty stadiums, NBA, WNBA in the bubble, you know, college football, pro football, et cetera. And now that we're in a time here, luckily, since so many people are fully vaccinated and things are going pretty well, that now we've got full stadiums, people are back, baseball games, you know, packed in. It's going to look especially strange, I think, to see what looks like a time warp, like we're time traveling back to a year ago. And that's unfortunate. And that's all because the Japanese, unfortunately, are not vaccinated at the rate that we are. About 15% of the Japanese population is now vaccinated. They were very slow off the mark, Paul, and were at only 3 or 4% about a month ago. And so there was vaccine hesitancy. They were doing well with their COVID numbers months ago, so they kind of got overconfident that they had it handled, and one would have thought they would have figured out how to make sure everyone was vaccinated with the Olympics coming, but that didn't happen. And now the price is being paid. No fans, and you know, some of the athletes I've talked to, the swimmers and others, are, it's going to be different. You know, they may pipe in music, pipe in crowd noise. But having said that, it's not like a college football game, you know, where you're expecting just the absolute roar of the crowd and the bands. An Olympics, if you think about, you know, some Olympics, like when people think of watching Michael Phelps, do you think of the fans in the stands? Yeah, you think of his mom there, and his sister and his wife and the little boomer 5 years ago. But you're not really thinking of a cheering section. And so I do think it might be minimized for a TV audience, that it's not as big a deal as we think, that you're not hearing crowd noise. And other Olympics in the past have had very, very sparse crowds. Athens in 2004, because of the threat of terrorism, so many travelers stayed away, spectators didn't come. You've had the same thing with a lot of other Olympics, where just some venues just aren't full ever of fans. So I think it's a mixed bag, but it's just a sign of the times in Japan, unfortunately.
Christine, we saw it 2 weeks ago in baseball, college baseball, where NC State had to go home as they were playing attempting to play for a ticket to the championship, because mm-hmm. the coach had not encouraged his players to be vaccinated, and a number of them didn't. They didn't want it to interfere. And then I'm hearing you yesterday, and then I'm reading your column today about Michael Andrews, who's was a top U.S. Olympic swimmer. Tell the audience the story of that and what it could mean.
Yes, Michael Andrew is going to be in multiple events in the Olympics. He's one of the best swimmers for the United States, and he turned pro when he was 14. He's 22 now. Very unorthodox training. His dad trained him in a backyard pool, different and very successful. And I had read in a couple articles about a blog that he, or a podcast he was on, where he said he wasn't going to get vaccinated. So we had media availability Zoom calls yesterday with the swimmers in their training camp in Hawaii. And one of them was with Michael and another swimmer, Chase Kalish. And so I asked Michael, I said, are you vaccinated? And if not, because there's such concern about vaccines and contact tracing. And the North Carolina State story is exactly what we're talking about here, but take it to the Olympics, which, I mean, if you don't tell the North Carolina State kids, right, it was devastating to them. But if it's the Olympic Games once every 4 years, in this case, once every 5 years, and all of a sudden your contact traced right out of an event, my goodness, right? And because Japan is so concerned, because we're all jumping through so many hoops, understandably, with COVID testing, all of us, the media, all of us, that the concern is great about losing out on one of your events. Anyway, I asked Michael Andrew. He was very honest with me, which I give him credit for. He said he was not vaccinated. He basically said that he didn't want it to interfere with his training, and he knew that he might have to take some days off if you get the vaccine, which I wrote a column that's online now that wow, what an excuse. I mean, Katie Ledecky, it took her some time away from training, and she did it, and Simone Manuel, and she did it, and of course, they're both Olympic gold medalists, unlike Michael at this point. And so basically what this means is that at least one American on our U.S. swim team is not vaccinated, and if you're vaccinated, you've got a good shot of not being contact traced at the Olympics. It's still a little murky how it's going to happen, but if you're unvaccinated, you absolutely can be contact traced. So if you talk to some Russian athlete for 5 minutes and then all of a sudden your app and contact tracing, they find out that there's a positive or even a COVID scare with that Russian athlete. I'm just making this up. And Michael Andrew's involved in that. Well, watch out, because he doesn't have that protection. He doesn't have that cocoon of safety, that safety net of having been vaccinated. What a risky, selfish, foolish move. I'm obviously pro-vaccine. I'm sure some of your listeners are not. But still, this is a bit different, even within that conversation, Paul, to me, because this impacts your teammates and the Olympics in Japan at this time with COVID. It's hard to believe that anyone would not be vaccinated, but Michael Andrew is not, and I think that is going to be a continuing story.
Talking to Christine Brennan, and I'm curious, when did you start going to the Olympics, Christine?
LA in 1984. I was a kindergartner, and
I do remember you vaguely around that time. I think I came and spoke to your kindergarten class.
Yeah, no, I think you and I are pretty close in age.
Yeah, we are.
I'm joking about that. But I was a young pup just starting out at the Miami Herald and covering those Olympics, and thrilled, absolutely thrilled. I'm sure you feel the same way. Some of my favorite memories of those some of those early things we covered. And for LA, those 16 days of sunshine and pastel colors and spectacular music, and that lives on to this day. And of course, without the Soviets and without these Germans, that was unfortunate. But Mary Lou Retton, Carl Lewis, so many others shined, and those memories last a lifetime for sure.
I want to close talking about your career a little bit, and it's been a rather troubling week, and we'll leave it at that in terms of women in sports media. But you know, you have a degree from Northwestern. I know how close you are to that school and how often you talk about it. You've done so much, for the Herald, the Post, now USA Today. You're sought out always, and are contributors to so many different news organizations. When you're stopped in airports during normal times, or speaking at your alma mater or other schools, what type of questions do you get, and what type of message do you have to young people who are interested in following your footsteps?
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Well, it's certainly changed. Back in the early days, it was a woman could be a sports writer. What? Really? Oh, how interesting. And then more questions about that, because it was just unusual back then in the 80s. And thankfully, they've long gone. And we know that women are everywhere in sports journalism and on TV, print, online, radio, and it's just fantastic. And it's a career for so many young men and young women, especially these young women who've grown up with Title IX, sports their entire lives, raised just like their brothers, who feel that they can have a career in sports. I had my own personal Title IX. I had my dad, and then I got the first blush of Title IX and was a six-sport athlete in high school, not because I was so good, but I just, you didn't have to specialize back then. And that was in the suburbs of Toledo, Ohio, Ottawa Hills High School. I had that personally, but now think of all of these young girls and women now in their 20s, 30s, 40s, onward, and all the kids that are 10, 12 years old, and how they're just come out having been products of Title IX. So that's fantastic. Basically what I find is just there's a sense of, they would, like I was, can you do this for a living? You get paid to go to sporting events. And I say to them what I've said to myself and for years in terms of how lucky I feel and how fortunate I am. This is the adventure of a lifetime. And I love it more today than the day I started. I'm sure you feel this way too, in large part because I appreciate it so much more. I appreciated it then, but once you've done it for a long time and know that you probably won't do it forever, although that would be nice, it's a nice feeling to know you're still doing it and having these opportunities. And I just, for me, this is Olympics number 19 in a row, winter and summer, from LA in 84 all the way through. And, what would 18-year-old me, Paul, have thought of that? Watching the 76 Olympics, getting ready to go to Northwestern and what, I'm not going to miss an Olympics from 1984 onward. I mean, I would have probably just burst into tears at the thought, could that possibly happen to me? And so I try when I talk to these young people who are wide-eyed like I was, and I probably still am a little, I try to encourage that magical feeling. Because, yes, there's tough issues. I wrote a tough column today on Michael Andrew. There's going to be more tough columns. But the joy of getting to do what you love, there's nothing better. I know you feel that way. And I know the listeners hear that in your voice, and I hope they hear it in mine right now, because I am so fortunate and so lucky, and I find that so many of these young people really are attracted to that and can't wait they can't wait to take our jobs. And I always say, hey, give me a couple more years before you take my job.
I think the message,
and it's lovely.
I think you're in good shape. I kind of feel the same way, Christine. At this point, you do start thinking, wow, we have done it a long time, and it does seem to mean a little bit more as you start to see those years pass by. And I'm sure you'll think about that on the endless journey to Tokyo here in a couple of days.
Exactly. Yes. No, it's again, we're lucky.
I you know, there's people listening and probably like, oh, I hate her, kind of love or whatever. Well, you know, and but they don't like you. They don't like both of us. You know, whatever. I appreciate every moment. I just feel so fortunate, so lucky. If it ended right now, it's been great. You know what I'm saying? But I don't want it to end right now, and I don't think it's going to, at least not right yet. But I also think for young people, there's nothing more exciting than talking to a young person about the opportunities for them and being able to retell some of these stories and encourage them the way that people encourage me and you and great mentors and role models that we've had, how lucky we were to have them in our lives.
Such an inspiration. Christine Brennan, so great to be able to talk to you, and be safe on the trip. And we hope to see you very, very soon.
Well, thank you, Paul. Look forward to it. And if we can find a time that works, I'm happy to do the show. So maybe
that would
we
be fabulous.
Figure that out.
We will definitely check with you on that. Have a safe trip over there, and be careful. We will talk to you soon. Christine Brennan joining us.
Thank you, Paul.
Wow, what a fantastic conversation. And we are going to take a break. More of your phone calls the rest of the way. We are coming right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Okay, we've got about 40 minutes to go. We're going to spend all of it with you at 855-242-7285. Still some spots available if you want to get in toward the end of the show. We have been jam-packed with guests, and we'll get your reaction to all of that in the final part of the program. Let's check in before we do that with Tyler, who's up next in Mobile, Alabama. Hello, Tyler.
Hi, Paul. Appreciate you taking my call.
Thank you. Appreciate you calling.
I wanted to get your opinion. So the NCAA, they've got this big black guy now, and everybody is trashing them. What's their next move? Because, I mean, I do think that amateurism, whatever that is, should be preserved. And I don't really want every athlete I see throwing the ball to make $10 million a year. So what do you think the next move is?
Well, they don't really have a very good move right now. I mean, their only move to try to their only move is to continue to go to Congress to get a uniform bill. But once you're allowing what's happening to happen, which is going on right now, you can't undo that. So I think they've already waited too long, and you know they've tried to get to preserve their tax exempt status. They've tried to do a bunch of things, but I don't think Congress really cares any longer. And you know, Congress has a great deal else going on that we're all aware of. So I think the NCAA has missed the moment.
There's so much money that they're putting in jeopardy. You know, like we talked about, their job is to make money. If their product goes down the drain because of, you know, public opinion,
but
they better do something.
Remember something important here. The NCAA has jurisdiction legislatively and administratively over college athletics. They don't have any real authority over college football. So where, you know, the biggest topic here is college football, and the NCAA does not have a voice in the college football playoff. They can sanction bowl games, but it's perfunctory. They really don't have anything to do with it. They run their basketball tournament, the baseball tournament, all the other things, which are fine. But
does it fall to conference now, you think? Or
yeah, I mean, ultimately the power in college football lies with the five power conferences. I mean, they broke away a couple of years ago in what was called the autonomy move. So, Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, the commissioner of all the other conferences, they essentially run the sport.
Right.
And but the NCAA has control over this issue that we're talking about, and you know, there really isn't a mechanism to keep up with it. So if, let's say you're an Alabama fan, and you find out Auburn, just in theory, is doing all kinds of nefarious things, and getting players that you can't do anything about it. Who are you going to call?
Yeah, right here. Well, I'm sure you'll think of something and tell them what to do, Paul.
thank you for the call. Yeah, and I have to say, I mean, I'm kind of half in and half out. I do think it's time, because the NCAA was fraudulent fraudulently hiding behind this amateur status, which wasn't existing anyway. But you know, we're really talking today about the consequences of this, and we'll get to more of your calls too. And part of what has spurred this on is two people, including Keith Donovan today, a longtime author and documentarian, who frankly thinks the model is going to be destroyed. He said it's a disaster. And we had another guest the other day who said that, and whether they're right or not, we'll find out. I mean, I know that sounds, you can enter any cliche you want, but they're not alone. Let's continue. AC is up next. AC, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. How you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great.
Perfect. Well, Mr. Feinbaum, I have two questions, and I have a quick suggestion for you. My question is, what's the worst and what's the best college football you have ever seen? No biased opinion, Mr. Feinbaum. My suggestion, sir, stack them, rack them, bank them, hook 'em horns.
Yeah. That's what AC is the caller that I love. The guy that asks a question and then answers his own question. It's an interesting question. Probably not for today, though. I want to go back to what I said a minute ago, what we're talking about. And I know a lot of you maybe have been reluctant, but I think we have spent an enormous amount of time over the last week or two talking about the good things of name, image, and likeness. But I'm really interested in the objections right now. We heard it early on. We heard it from old line fans. I don't like this. It's going to ruin the game. But why is it going to ruin the game? Why is it going to ruin the game if players make money? Is it going to destroy the locker room? That's what Keith Donovan said. He said the biggest issue is the locker room. You know, many of you listening have played college football. Even more of you have played high school football. Lean on your own experiences for a second and think about how you had to manage high school, college, whatever. We've all been on teams, some better than others. How you've had to manage that aspect when there's clearly a star system. I've worked in countless places where there is a star system. It doesn't matter really right from wrong, it's already set. And that's just the way it goes. And I'm sure many of you dealt with that in the workplace.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, SAVE. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Where the standards are set, and it really, your performance is not performative. It's all about the preconceived notions of the people that run the place. But in a locker room is different. Locker rooms tend to work themselves out. But what is going to happen now? When the quarterback's making a lot of money, the lineman's not. It's not being shared. Does it work out okay unless that one or two people are spending too much time? Does a quarterback who normally would go back and look at film every night until midnight, is he now out making appearances? Is he on social media doing, answering requests so he can make some money. I mean, there are a lot of issues here which are quite extraordinary. We'll spend the last 30 minutes talking about it. You can give us a call now, and the phone number is obvious. Obviously has not changed. It's 855-242-7285, and we are coming back right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back for the final 25 minutes, and Dave is up next. Hey, Dave.
What's going on?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Listen, I don't think the locker room is going to be as big a deal as people make it out to be. You know,
okay.
If I'm a center or I'm a second-string linebacker, I'm glad my running back was a Heisman Trophy candidate and just signed that $10,000 deal. I'm glad he's on my team. What I do see a problem in being, the playoff committee is expanding to 12 teams from four to give group of five teams a shot to get in, right? What's happened is the recruiting advantage, okay, the gap has gone from the Chattahoochee River down to the Pacific Ocean. They've already said there's no cap, there's no money line. So where do you draw the line? So now your elite school, your top five or six schools, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, Notre Dame, whatever, LSU, they're getting the majority of the five-star athletes. They're probably signing between those schools in Oklahoma, probably 97% of the five-star athletes. Now they're going to get 100% of them. Because what's going to happen is the NCAA should have said all incoming athletes are ineligible to participate in NIL. You can as a redshirt freshman, sophomore, going forward, but we want to stop the fact that they're now going to be a recruiting nightmare between the number one quarterback in the country coming in, talking to five schools, and there's a bidding war from boosters to this quarterback. Come here, we'll get you $10,000 a month. Come here, we'll get you $20,000 a month. Come here, we'll get you $200,000 a month. Where do you draw the line? You can't police it because there is no police because they defunded the police, remember?
I do remember that now. Thanks for enlightening us. Hey, good to hear from you. I appreciate it. Jason is up next. Hey, Jason, good afternoon.
Yeah, Paul, along with what the previous caller just said, how does it affect recruiting out of high school? You've got kids that are looking at two different schools. School A's got a lot of money, got a lot of cachet. School B doesn't. The sponsor comes along and says, hey, if you go to school A, we'll be willing to give you, $100,000 to, to peddle our gear. But if you go to school B, there's not a lot of people there. We might get you, $50,000 to $100,000. Does a high school kid suddenly say, well, I think I'm going to go to school A because he came from nothing and he's looking to make something out of himself and make some money. And, just along with that, how does it affect, recruiting, even though it's not supposed to be going on in the transfer portal, but does some kid decide to jump to school A because, the school that he's at just doesn't have the resources or the cachet to cash in with a sponsor? You kind of have to wonder, is that what's going on with O'Banner at the school he's at now? He's seeing that he's probably not going to get a whole lot of money there. Maybe he wants to go to another school where he can cash in more. I don't know.
That's a really good point. Thank you so much for calling. We've heard some good stuff here already. Let's check in with Marcus, who's on the line. Hello, Marcus. Go right ahead.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I got three scenarios for you that may come up. The last one's more of a joke, but the first two, let's say, and I don't know the wording of the NIL deal. I haven't read it specifically, but let's say a company offers running back A, hey, if you get 1,000 yards this season, we'll give you a bonus. We'll give you a bonus of $700, whatever it is, maybe probably more, $2,000. And he's sitting on the cusp at 900 yards for the season, and the coach says, hey, you're not playing this week. This team right here works better for running back B. Well, now that could fracture the locker room depending on the conversations that are had between players. Scenario B would be, let's say a company says, hey, we'll pay you for playing X number of games this year. And then after game 3-4, kid has a concussion, should be out the next week. And I think with the concussion protocol, you may not run into this, but it could happen. The kid flies under the radar, says, no, I'm good, because he wants the money. And now you may see more kids playing hurt if they have the kind of deal for it's per game And the last scenario for you, like I said, kind of a joke. How long do you think it takes till we see Bo Nix this year drinking Milo's tea on the sideline?
I hope for his sake it's after the game and not during the game while he's watching the first team quarterback. Thanks for the call. Let's check out Danny, who is up next. Hey, Danny, good afternoon. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, Paul. I hope you can still hear me okay. I'm kind of out in the country a little bit.
Yeah, you sound great. Thank you.
All right. Man, I'm a long-time listener since way back before they even had satellite radio.
Oh, my. Well, thanks for calling.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. So my biggest thing with paying these guys in college is, as a consumer, I like football. I love college football. I watch NFL from time to time. I never have watched it as much as I've watched college football, followed college football. And I think part of that is because most of those guys out there, of course, they're busting their tail trying to get to the next level, trying to make it to the NFL. So they're giving it everything they got, every single play, all game long. And there's kids out there that are playing that know, hey, I'm not going to get past this level. You know, I'm always, you know, this is where it's going to end, is at college football. Man, they're playing for the love of the game. They're playing for the brothers in the locker room that are there beside them all the time. And that's why they go out there and do it. I think when you start paying these guys, you're going to lose a lot of the guys that really have a passion for the school, have a passion for the area, and those guys that are just, you know, giving it all just to make it to the next level, trying to catch somebody's eye. I think you're going to lose a lot of that because they're going to start playing more for themselves than for the team mentality, because they know they're going to be able to make money outside of it. And that's the only holdback I have to. I got no problem with some of them getting paid. I just don't know the right way to go about doing it to keep everything, I guess, more or less the way that it is now, keep the excitement the way that it is now, surrounded by team and not so much myself and me.
Well, thank you very much for sharing that. I think people have to remember, you can't put this back in. It's here. It's just a matter of how you manage it and how you live with it. Let's continue with some more calls here. We've really gotten some great calls. Paul is up next. Paul, go right ahead. You're on the air.
Paul, thank you so much for taking my call. Well, just kind of want your perspective here a little bit. You know, where you're talking about or mentioned earlier that you know, this NIL stuff, in a lot of folks' mind, is going to kind of rightize, you know, the college football game a little bit. And I seem to kind of carry the same perspective for the most part, you know, because I just think, Paul, that any time you begin to allow, you know, money that people can begin to get their hands on to be the driving force behind them wanting to participate in something, like we're going to have now with these college athletes, that I just really think now these kids are no longer going to be wanting to come to these universities, you know, to play for a championship, or to say that I played for Alabama, or to say that I played for Ohio State. You know, they're coming out to make money. And I just really feel like that, you know, with what's on the brink here, that – you know, college football as we know it, and I kind of see it as, you know, college athletes and athletics in general is still that arena that's kind of in its purest form. But I just really see that changing over time. I really do, because I just don't see these kids coming in now, you know, with this having the same reasoning for coming in and playing college athletics as used to be. Give me a little bit of your perspective on that. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a juggling act. There's no question that some are going. I mean, listen, we're all affected by money in different ways. I mean, I've seen it. You've seen it. I mean, we don't have the time today to have our personal. I mean, I've seen really good people, as I'm sure you have, lose all perspective. Now, I'm talking about adults. We're talking about 18 to 23 here. So yeah, the likelihood of that happening is quite high, and how coaches manage this will ultimately determine where it goes, and it is going to be difficult. And even a guy like Nick Saban, he's used to running his operation as a dictator. He has to be a little more careful here, because in today's world of social media, one bad move could really be costly. I don't think it will happen, but he's acutely aware of it. We need to run to a break. A couple more minutes, more of your phone calls right after this.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.